Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Rural Routes, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Alice Venter, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do when we gather is continue to address the issues between rural and urban America. Today we have somebody who is working hard at blending rural and urban America. I was going to call her my own very Georgia peach, but she quickly told me, Trent, I'm not a peach. I'm a Tar Heel. Welcome to Rural Routes, Allison Venter. How are you?
Thank you. I'm very well. Thanks for having me.
Are you really coming to us from Georgia?
I am, yes. Northeast Georgia.
Are you really coming to us from Butt Naked Farms?
From Butt Naked Foods, yep. Food? Baldwin Falls Farm, Butt Naked Foods, yes.
So you got your own label. And you know, sex sells, doesn't it, Alice? Way to go.
It does, yep.
So tell us about your farming operation.
Well, we're a very small family farm. We raise pork, we raise lamb, we produce eggs, chicken, duck, rabbit, goose. So we've got a lot going on, but our food label, Butt Naked Foods, refers to the way that we raise our animals, our meat. And we are not USDA certified, so we are butt naked. So it's raised organically, naturally, but we don't necessarily need the government to tell us that that our food is wholesome. So. And to pay the price that it costs to have that USDA certified organic or certification. So we're butt naked, and our customers understand that from our label, and we just have a good old time raising animals and rubbing their bellies and providing wholesome, clean food for our customers.
See, I happen to believe that the whole movement to organic was never actually about organic. It was about what you're doing already. People who are buying food, there's a percentage. And I estimate that number to be 3%. I'd love to hear you say what it is. That want to know the individual that grows their food, whether it was an animal or a plant. And now the whole thing has just become hijacked by individuals that thought it was about chemicals and all of these other things. And that's never what it was about. So that's why it's transferred over to local food, because everybody screwed up the organic concept. Will you agree or disagree?
I agree. I think that I think that they've just really taken over the whole just raising animals the way that they're naturally raised is organic in itself, and they have hijacked it, because it's all about money, and it costs a lot to get the certification. It costs a lot to pay for the food, and everybody's making a little bit of money, but we don't run things like that here.
We should clarify, I think, when you were talking about we don't do a USDA certification, that is, you don't go for the certified organic standard.
Right. Our customers are free to come to our farm and determine whether or not our food is good for their needs. So it's the farm to fork movement, or the whole slow food and, know your farmer, know your food type thing. But the reason we don't do the certification is because we, as I stated before, I don't need for a government agency to tell me that my food is wholesome for my customers. So they're able to determine that for themselves. We show what we feed. We show how they're raised. A lot of people don't want to know. They just want to know that it was raised locally. So really, like you said, that whole 3% thing, that's probably about right.
And you are trendy. You know how I know that?
How's that?
I'm watching a video of your hogs on the Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
You have Hereford hogs. That's the
I do.
That's the new trendy thing.
Is it new? I didn't know that.
It's the new rage. Hereford hogs and Hereford cattle, by the way. It's Hereford's time.
Yes. Well, that's good. They're fantastic. We've raised Berkshires. We've raised Tamworth. We've raised Landrace, Duroc. And these Herefords they're fantastic creatures. Their temperament's wonderful. Their conformation is beautiful. I mean, those hams. We like big butts, and we can't lie.
I think it's called Butt Naked Foods is what I think.
It is. Yeah. Yep, that's right. That's right. But they're beautiful animals. And we have two gilts that are pregnant now, and we're hoping that mid-April we'll have some beautiful piglets. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, how they perform as mothers and what kind of litters they produce. So, fingers crossed. But I didn't know they were trendy.
Yeah, they're
that's
trendy.
Good.
They're
I'm on the up and up.
And I should qualify that. They're trendy in the purebred circle. You see, we have 100 sows, and our primary market is show pigs.
Mm.
You're familiar with that?
I am.
And so we try to sell show pigs, and the Hereford Association was just brought in, and pedigrees are now being produced for the Hereford hogs by the certified pedigreed swine operation up here in Illinois. And the reason that merger took place, and the merger is just about who keeps track of their pedigrees and their genetics, is because all the little girls now want a Hereford gilt to show.
Do they now?
They
I
do.
Did not know. That's fantastic.
I know, right?
Well, they're beautiful.
I wish I had a Hereford sow, but I don't. I'm just going to live vicariously through you. We have Burkes, though. We have 15 Burke sows.
Now, those are equally, they're really excellent temperament. They're fantastic mothers. Their meat is beautiful and marbled. So, that's my second choice.
From a protein standpoint, you mentioned lamb and pork. You didn't say beef.
Nope, don't have enough space for beef. We've only got 6 acres on my farm, and then there's the other. It's Baldwin Falls Farms, and of course, Butt Naked Foods is our food label. The other farm is only has 11 acres. So once we get that cleared out, then we may be able to add beef to our repertoire. But you know, even if it's just raising it for ourselves at first, but yeah, we don't do that yet. I'm looking forward to it, though.
So I've always been troubled, and reminds me, I have not talked about it for quite some time, that our lamb consumption in the United States really sucks.
Mm-hmm.
We're at 0.5 pound per person a year. I love lamb, and I really got hung up on it. I was somewhat of a lamb consumer, but I've spoken twice to the national lamb meeting in Australia, and man, once you have some great Australian lamb, you come back and you seek it, and so I have lamb in the freezer all the time. What do you find as the demand for lamb? Because I'm thinking in your niche marketing scenario, it could be quite good.
It has been, actually. We don't have a lot of customers, but what got us into it is the fact that my husband is from South Africa, and we have a lot of South African friends, and that is a huge protein for South Africans. More so than pork, of course. I don't know. I'm not sure why that is, but we have a lot of South Africans that are interested, and it's been easy, you know, something that has been in demand. But you're right. Almost everyone says, "Oh, I'm not eating mutton." No, you're not eating mutton. You're eating lamb. There's a difference. And I don't know. Maybe because it's so expensive in the grocery store. I'm not sure why we're not eating lamb. Well, I mean, really, it's a fantastic protein. It's delicious.
It is, but you're spot on. Lamb is typically $20 a pound in a grocery store, particularly a rack of lamb or lamb chops.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
I have 1 minute, Alice, in this first segment. You market? Just kind of a summary on how you market.
The only marketing that we have done thus far is through Facebook and word of mouth. We do work farmers markets, and so that's been, you know, a good source of word of mouth. You know, someone gets your product and they see your really cute labels, says Butt Naked Foods. Oh, haha! You know, look how funny this is, and then they pass that on to their friends. So the only marketing we've done has been through Facebook and through farmers markets. So, we haven't had to market any other way. So we're real proud of that.
Alice Venter is my guest. Baldwin what was the name in there in the middle? Baldwin.
Baldwin Falls Farms.
Baldwin Falls Farms. I suppose I should write that down. I don't know. I guess it's because I'm thinking of Butt Naked Foods.
Butt Naked Foods.
No matter. I got to go. We'll be back with more. She's got a story to tell. We'll do it after this. The All-American Beef Battalion continues to lead the charge in saying thank you to our men and women in the United States military. The troops, the veterans, anyone who has risked their life. And I don't care if you've been deployed or not. If you are a member of the National Guard, you too are a veteran who has contributed to the United States being the greatest nation in the world. We say thank you to all of you that have ever wore the uniform. Is it wore or worn? I don't know. I'll ask Kathy Blair. She'll know. StakesForTroops.com. Get more details about contributing and being a part of this phenomenal endeavor. StakesForTroops.com. It's the All-American Beef Battalion. Welcome back to Roll Routes. I'm Trent Luce alongside Alice Venter, joining us from Northeast Georgia, Baldwin Falls Farms, producing Butt Naked Foods. Now I got it all down. So I sent a note to my producer, my volunteer producer, who doesn't get paid. She just generates ideas. She lives in Manhattan. Her name's Andra. Do you know anything about her?
Oh, yeah. I know Andra. Yeah.
I sent her a note last night, and I said, I think you did me good this time. Thanks. Finally. And she got all over. Oh, she got all over me. She said, oh, we weren't interested the last time I suggested you have her on. I don't know how that ever happened. I would have never been not interested. I must not have been paying attention.
Yeah. But that's funny.
You tend to get in a scuff from time to time, huh?
Mm-hmm, you do. Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. one track mind. I'm on a tangent here. Let's just, I don't see anything else going on. That's me all the time.
Yeah. What have you had happen? What's going on politically?
Well, I know Andrew and I were having a conversation. She posted something about
the gorilla.
Yeah, she did, and it was a guy that was saying, we need to take white people's houses. We want their cars. We want their money. And it was it echoed some things that happened in South Africa, where my husband's from, and I lived there for a while also. And my husband's made the comment many times over the last, just under a decade, about how much similarities there are in how things were going in South Africa that's brought them to the point they're at now. And this video was very, very similar to some of the things that we've seen going on in South Africa. And my husband says, he feels like the U.S. is going in the same direction. So, that's disturbing, because it's a beautiful country, but unfortunately, it's so dangerous that people are having to live in cages. I mean, my husband's aunt, or my aunt also, we've been married long enough to say that, she has, she lives in an apartment that is in a secured gated community. She has to park her car in a cage, get out, unlock a gate to get to her front door, unlock a steel gate to her front door, and then inside of her home, she has a steel door on each one of her bedrooms. And that's just no way to live.
No, it is not. Mm-hmm. So the timing was most interesting this week, because I earlier this week found an article talking about endangered species, and our Endangered Species Act has been a miserable failure. All it has done is, and maybe that was not the original intent, but it's what the people who administer it today want to do, which is remove my property rights. 2,600 plants and animals have been listed as endangered since 1973, and they claim they've recovered 11 of them, and Alice, 6 of them don't even exist in the United States. The red kangaroo, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's claim as a success story, and it only exists in Australia. How can you do that? How can you claim benefit to that? So okay, even if they had all 11 out of 2,600 is not a success story. All right, the reason I'm talking about that is because there was an individual from Australia who just this week proposed that the answer to the endangered species problem in the United States and globally is to privatize it, get it out of the hands of the federal government. But then, and this is why I'm walking down this path, he then referenced what is happening in South Africa. And everybody, I think, today, let me speak for the United States. People in the United States know there's this wonderful safari where wild animals roam, and you can go with your binoculars, or maybe you can get a legal license and go hunt these animals. But what people don't seem to know is where that wonderful safari is in South Africa used to be white farmers who were tending to their lands just like as if we were in Nebraska, Iowa, or Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And after the apartheid, they were literally run out of the country. And I only know this because I have three personal friends who one of them lives in Kentucky. He told me to date 54 of his friends. He was a dairyman in South Africa. And 54 friends that he had are now have been murdered in their own homes because they've just simply came and taken that property away. And that leads into what you were talking about and what people don't seem to know in the United States. This is how this all happened.
It is actually. So my husband lived on an 8,000 hectare farm,
right.
A potato farm. They raised potatoes, they raised cattle, they raised tomatoes, all kinds of things. So this farm, this was probably in the 80s is what was going on when it really got really bad. But my husband's family's farm in particular, it was becoming too dangerous to keep the farm. As a matter of fact, when my husband was in school, in elementary school, they had to ride to school in what's called a rattle, which means, honey badger. And we all know how honey badgers are. They're pretty tough creatures. So anyway, they were having to ride to school in this vehicle because of landmines being planted. Mm-hmm. And it just was – they really were trying to run them out of the country so that they could take the land that had been cultivated, that had been worked, and use it for their own purposes. So anyway, long story short, it became too dangerous to stay on the farm, and they sold it. Fortunately, they sold it to a family friend who turned it into a game farm. So he does the safaris and the, mm-hmm. The lodge where you can go in and do hunts and things like that. And he has rhinoceros, he had hippos, zebras, eland and kudu, just, you know, all kinds of things. So it's a great place for the animals to live. It's a great income, but they still face threat of what they call land claims. And that is where the people in South Africa, the natives, are going to the government and putting in a claim saying, my family has claim to this land before the white people have land. Before they had claim to this land, and we want it back. And in a lot of cases, they're getting it. And if they're not getting it, then they're going in and murdering them. But it's not just a matter of going in and just shooting the people and then taking over the land. They are absolutely terrorizing and torturing. I mean, I wouldn't even be comfortable saying on the radio the kinds of things that are going on, but it's at the point where the last time that I went, my oldest daughter was 9 months old, and I had to dress her like she was a little boy to prevent her from being kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, your imagination can take it from there. But so, and it's terrorism. And it's got absolutely, it has had absolutely no coverage from our media. So people don't know that this is going on. But these farms are, in some cases being taken, in other cases they're being turned into private game farms, which is great. But you know, at some point they're going to run out of food.
Right.
because no one wants to no one wants to have a dangerous situation. So, but our friend, another friend that has an avocado farm in South Africa, it's in the Mpumalanga province. He, all of the farms around him have been attacked. He himself, his farm has not been attacked, and I think that that's sort of due to the fact that he's got a bit of a nasty reputation. But he also has a fantastic relationship with his farmhands, with his workers. And so there's a lot of trust there, and that's been very important because, you know, a lot of betrayal and people are greedy, unfortunately. But recently, actually it was about 2 months ago, the farm adjacent to his farm was attacked twice in one night. They came in, beat everybody to a pulp, left. I don't know why they just left and didn't do anything else or kill them. But the police came, did their investigation, left. The people came back again that night.
Wow.
Or early that morning. Yeah.
Alice, I've got to go to a break. Alice Venture, my guest, Baldwin Falls Farms from Georgia. We'll be back with more Reality 101 after this. Let's talk about marketing cattle the Superior way in 2017. Superior Livestock Auction has a huge presence at the Cattle Industry Convention happening today in Nashville, Tennessee. Here's the deal. I have it on good authority. If you walk into the Superior booth at the convention and say, Trent sent me for a pair of gloves, your hands will not get cold while in Opryland Hotel. True story. Trust me. Try it out. SuperiorLivestock.com to get more details about how you can add more value to your cattle in 2017. Find your rep. That's number one. Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce alongside Alice Venter, coming to us from Baldwin Falls Farms, Butt Naked Foods, Northeast Georgia. We started talking about warm, fuzzy things like Hereford hogs. And you didn't say, did you? What kind of sheep do you raise?
We have a Katahdin and Dorper cross.
What do you have against wool?
You nothing against the wool other than just the lanolin taste or the possibility of it. We have raised wool sheep and they were absolutely delicious. But we like the Dorper specifically because of their hardiness and also the, you know, the way that they browse.
I know why you like them.
Uh-huh, they're from South
they're
Africa.
From
okay.
South Africa.
A good, meaty African sheep, yes.
And by the way, I want to answer a previous question that was just kind of a... The South Africans had sheep, not pigs, because the resources that were there most adapted to feeding sheep, they just were out foraging themselves instead of feeding grain.
Right. Oh, yeah.
That's a question.
Okay.
I think that's the answer.
I think it is too, because those Dorpers are really good. There's
right.
not a whole, like you said, not a whole lot of forage, so they're really good at browsing, and that's why we like them here.
Right.
Because in Georgia we have Hedge, which is my arch nemesis, and they love Hedge, so I love for them to love the Hedge.
Oh yeah, that's a really good deal.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely.
Those Hedge apples. I've heard them kill cows before.
Hedge, oh, yeah. Now, that's, yes, I know the hedge apples. Is that not the same thing as, oh, my gosh, I can't think of it now. Osage orange?
Yes, isn't that the same thing.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, we do have a little bit of it, but this is privy hedge.
Oh.
So, fortunately, it doesn't have any thorns. It doesn't have the apples and... Absolutely everything loves to eat it, but it grows and it takes over your property, and it's terrible. So,
anything else that's unique about the farm before we start talking about Africa again?
I don't know. You know, we're just a, well, I call it the funny farm.
You know, there has to be people listening, Alice, that say, it doesn't sound like it's big enough to do anything. Can you sustain a living with the size and scope that you have?
So, at the moment, no, but we're still, in the early stages, of, you know, we're still clearing out land. So the more land you have, the more you can keep and the more you can sell. So we're just sort of building everything up and things are finally gaining momentum. We're about 7 years into that, into this, but that 7 years has included things like building a house and and working and kids going to school. So, but we are... we're getting pretty close to where we can go in and sustain at least the farm, have the farm sustain itself. So, but as far as income, not quite yet. We're getting there though.
All right. Yeah. Well, I expect you to say, well, we weren't, but now that I've been on the radio with you, Trent, I think the new day has arrived.
Heck yeah. We hit the big time, baby. We hit the big time.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I want to circle back for now. Mm-hmm. This is just a coffee shop discussion. It's whatever comes on our mind.
Okay.
I want to share with you where I went on October 27th. And first, I'll let you know that you wouldn't know. North Dakota. I live in Nebraska, but I've always had this relationship with North Dakota and the people of North Dakota that is just, it's very comforting. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. The folks in North Dakota were beginning to experience some unpleasantries. The Standing Rock tribe and the chairman, David Archambault, was talking about treaties of 1859 and 1851, that these lands did not belong to the individuals that lived around there, the individual ranchers, they belonged to the tribe. They're, you know that somebody was going to come in and build a pipeline that goes underneath the Missouri River. It doesn't matter that it's 150 feet below the bottom of the water, the bottom of the lake, and there's seven other pipelines that go through there. People got all excited. Long story short, thousands and thousands of people came to South Central North Dakota, all talking about the white man had the land that belonged to the Indian. And then individual ranching families who had been there for four generations started moving their families to town because it wasn't safe. I had school children who were going to school with a police escort on the bus because it wasn't safe. Buffalo, 14 buffalo were literally stolen. It is complete lawlessness. People did not feel safe in their homes. I stayed at a friend's house right by the protest the night that I was there. On October the 27th, the day that the most arrest did occur during that protest. Today, as we speak, I am told from North Dakota that because Donald Trump issued the permit to drill, and they are drilling as we speak today underneath that Lake Oahe, that the new call came out. But, and I'm all about the First Amendment. I am the leading proponent for the First Amendment, but what we have seen is absolute lawlessness and disrespect for property. And Alice, I walk you down that path because that was when I called my friend from South Africa who had years ago, he's been here 15 years, 15 years ago, Jeff told me about how all of this unfolded, very similar to what you told me, only he was much more graphic. I said, Jeff, here's what's going on in North Dakota. Is there a parallel to what you lived through when you got run out? His wife told me, Trent, I just got tired of sleeping with a shotgun. I told Jeff, I'm leaving. Come with me or stay here and be killed.
Right.
And Jeff said, Trent, I didn't know any of that was happening in North Dakota in that manner, but you just described the same exact scenario that I lived through.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. It sounds so familiar. You know, kids having to be transported to school because children of all things are threatened. Mm-hmm. You know, and it is, like I said, my husband for the last 10 years at least has been talking about this, the parallels and the similarities. And it's rather upsetting. We're pretty safe where we are here in Northeast Georgia. We haven't had any issues, but, you know, things like that, we're much larger. We're on a much larger scale than South Africa to begin with.
Right.
But yeah, it's the same thing. And, you know, people are going to start waking up when they are hearing about, you know, grandparents being tied up with phone cords and boiling water being poured down their throat. I mean, people being torched, their genitals are cut off, and babies are being raped. And that's, you know, people
are... That's hard to hear, Alice. It's hard for me even to listen to you talk about that. But the American public has not been told what actually happened.
Nope, they sure haven't. In fact, they were so, I believe, and this is just me, this is just what I see, or my perspective, is that because of the whole apartheid and how Jimmy Carter supposedly rescued everyone, and Mandela was let out of jail, and, you know, Mandela was a murderer. They found him sleeping on top of bombs when they found him, and excuse me. And so, because Americans were supporting, apartheid being done away with, and the ANC taking over the government, I think it would be a bit of a black eye for them to see, you know, now what the condition that South Africa's in. So, you know, my children, that's their heritage. I will not take my children to South Africa because I value their life. And at some point, and it's all justified, they're dancing around singing Kill the Boer, which a Boer is a farmer, mm-hmm. But very specifically Afrikaans farmers or people, mm-hmm. and they're chanting Kill the Boer.
By the way, that mm-hmm. sign, I have a picture, you can go back on my Facebook page, that mm-hmm. sign showed up in Bismarck, North Dakota in November 2016.
Really?
Yes, absolutely.
Mm, yep. Kill the Boer and take their land. And same thing happened in Zimbabwe, even faster and even worse. And so, you know, it's just, it is a catastrophe. I don't want to see this wonderful land, this wonderful country taken over by people who are willing to do things like that.
And I hang in circles, Alice, where we spend a lot of time talking about our rights are eroding, our mm-hmm. property rights. I talk about in 2007, a law professor from the University of Chicago came to North Platte, Nebraska, and he said to a group of 300, mostly ranchers, that land ownership by individuals is morally problematic and was a lousy idea. Mm-hmm. When I was at the terroristic activities in North Dakota, I found somebody that was behind the scenes actually calling the shots, and they're from a global organization that I won't name because I don't want to give them a plug. But the mm-hmm. individual I was talking to literally told me that we've just got to get past this notion that people can own land because land belongs to the people of Earth. So at the core, what we're really dealing with is individuals who are opposed to property rights, and they are funneling money into terroristic activities to steal them.
Mm-hmm. I bet they don't own any land themselves.
No, they don't.
Because when you get your hands in the soil of something that you, in land that you own, and you're literally dripping blood and sweat into it to carve out a life for yourself, even if it doesn't make you any money, it gives you something to do that other than sitting in a bar, let's put it that way, or dancing around in the streets for some cause that is just a figment of your imagination, actually. Mm-hmm. You know,
or you're just simply paid to do it.
Or paid to, that's right. I've actually had a job offer this activist job offer when I was like maybe 20 or 21. And I thought, I want to be an activist. And then they sit us in this room. Like, we're going to pay you $10 an hour to walk around neighborhoods and knock on doors and educate people. And I was, okay, educate them about what? So they sit us down in front of this video about.
This is going to blow into something really, really good. And I can't let you do it. Alice Venter, okay. My guest. We'll blow into that video when we get back with more Butt Naked Farm Foods. Good grief, Grant. After this. I want to take this opportunity to remind you about the technological advancements and innovation that Kelly and I have brought into our own sow herd. You know that we have the computerized automated sow feeding system. I've had some people say, well, Trent, you know, I just don't want to do that because I like the interaction with the sows. Well, we just don't carry 5-gallon buckets. We still go through the sows, we monitor them, and we learned the hard way that those tags that create the feed opportunity for sows, they can be lost. So you have to go through the sows regularly to make sure that, number one, they're in the correct body condition, because you can change that on an individual basis. Plus, when they lose a tag, they can get rather hungry after a couple of days. So you still need to have animal husbandry 101, but you don't need to carry 5-gallon buckets. That's the bottom line. Simplicity and reliability. That's the winning combination with the MPS Agra system electronic sow feeders that we use. MPSAgra.co.uk. MPSAgra.co.uk. Welcome back to Rural Routes. I'm Trent Luce. Baldwin Falls Farms, Butt Naked Foods. Most importantly, all you really need to remember is Alice Venter coming to us from somewhere in Jimmy Carter country. Funny how you bring up the only presidents from Georgia in the context of your conversations, Alice.
I know it.
So if I were any good at my job, oh, now you got me all choked up. Look at that. Talk about Jimmy Carter and I lose it.
Throat starts to quiver.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. By the way, let's just say something positive about the man. He's a great gentleman. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who was on a plane that he rode to the inauguration on.
Oh, wow.
He walked the plane and shook everybody's hand.
Well, that was nice.
That's awesome.
It is.
That's a southern gentleman right there.
I was going to say, that's the southern hospitality coming out in him.
Too bad he ran the country like a southern gentleman, too. Ugh. All right.
Yeah.
So.
True. Yes. Definitely a thorn in my side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You should be on here more often. I'm going to just say that straight up.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah. I'll come back anytime you want.
Oh, perfect. Okay, so if I were any good at my job, this is where I was about to go, when somehow we got hung up on Jimmy Carter. Now I'm choked up again, I mentioned it. But anyway, if I was any good, I would have started with, who's Alice Venter and where did you come from? Which would have led us into you sitting down looking at videos. But what got you to this point? Why? You didn't grow up on a farm. You're now farming.
Mm-hmm.
How did this all happen?
Well, gosh, that's sort of a, I don't know, it sort of happened quick and happened sort of, you know, things just went right past me. But I grew up, I was born in North Carolina. I think you mentioned, you know, I'm a Tar Heel.
Uh-huh.
But when I was at the ripe old age of 18 months, my mom, who's a school teacher, found a job in Savannah, teaching school. So we moved down there and I grew up in Savannah, beach baby, lived on the beach, didn't know anything about where food came except for that it was wrapped in plastic and came on a styrofoam plate. But I met my husband in high school about a month before he had to go back to South Africa because he was here with his family. His dad had a temporary work visa. And it was time for him to go back home, and we kept contact for a couple years, and one day he calls me up, and he says, listen, I got this plane ticket. Mm-hmm. And he says, but you got to leave tomorrow. I said, oh, okay. I'll see you tomorrow then. Well, plus one day, because it's an 18-hour flight. And I guess the next day he asked me to marry him. 3 weeks later, we're married. And we got married on South African soil, but I had to come back to the U.S. without him because we had to wait for his green card to be approved. So I waited about 15 months for that, and in the meantime, 9/11 happened. But finally, by following the rules and the law, he was able to come here, and we lived in the city for a while in Houston, Texas. We lived there for a while, And I think because my husband grew up on such a large farm and with his hands in the soil, he wanted to get back to that.
Right.
So I resisted. No, I want to be in the city, and I'm not going to eat eggs that have poop on them. And I can't even imagine, like, who she is that is back then.
I want to take the cellophane off of my pork loin. I don't want to take the pig skin off of the pig.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. That's right. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. What do you mean there's, you know, pork belly's got nipples on it? What is that? My husband grabs a knife and cuts the nipple off. He says, it ain't got a nipple anymore. That was the best bacon I ever had.
I think we just had the sound bite of the year right there on the radio. What do you mean my pork belly has a nipple on it?
Yeah, ew. Oh, Lord. So so that's how we got to where we are now. We just, my husband, you know, is the leader of our family, and he led us this way. And I just can't even imagine life any other way. Mm-hmm. Any other way. I eat eggs. I wash the poop off of them first, but, sure. But we eat our, yeah. But I just, I can't imagine life any other way. We get to be creative. We get to be outside. We get to be among, you know, animals, and, you know, they're usually pretty good company anyway. but most importantly, we had two very small daughters, and we wanted for them to grow up with that, in their blood. We wanted them to grow up with those experiences and to gain the compassion that comes from living this lifestyle, to gain the sense of self-reliance, to gain the sense of, you know, of having control over your own land, over your own self, knowing how to take care of yourself. You know, so here we are. That's how we got here.
And at the age of 20, you sat down to watch a video because someone was recruiting you to be an activist.
Yeah, I thought, ooh, $10 an hour to be an activist. This is going to be great. So they sat me down in front of a video and showed me some very heartbreaking things, like whale poaching and, oh gosh, I don't know, all kinds of things. But I started to smell a rat, mm-hmm. when I was watching this video and thinking, and I really, at that point, at 20, coming from the city, and, you know, top priority was making a few bucks so that you could get to the club on the weekends. That was life. So, but I started to smell a rat. And, so after we watched the video, they gave us some materials, some, literature, and we go and knock on people's door and say, you know, did you know about this? And it was animal rights activism is what it was. But there, it just didn't seem to fit in with what I knew already that I had learned over my 20 years about how things work and about, you know, in the animal community and things like that. So anyway, they had us knocking on the door, and I just, you know, I was put off by the fact that I was being paid to do this. I thought, this is something, if you really feel strongly about animals' rights, then why aren't you out there volunteering this, or mm-hmm. volunteering in shelters, or, you know, get your vet tech license and go do something that actually makes a difference instead of knocking on people's door. So I just didn't understand it. Now that I've had a little more life experience, I understood exactly how crooked that was. You know, you can't pay someone to be an activist. You're either an activist or you're not. You either have a job or you're volunteering. So, yeah, they were paying us for animals' rights. I don't. So that was very.
I liken it to being paid to be an activist. I liken it to Gus paying for a poke on Lonesome Dove.
Oh my goodness, pretty good.
It's no different.
That's
absolutely no different.
Mm-mm. That's right.
Yeah.
So I just couldn't even, it just really blew my mind. It did not compute. Yes.
Alice, I want to have one other conversation because this has just been like the fastest hour ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You sent some very refreshing comments last night, first time we spoke. And that was that we can't have this fight versus big and little farms.
Mm. Yes. Yeah, you know, well, Andra and I, the way that she and I met was was on Facebook. There was a really cute, I mean, this video was just so cute. It was a kid with his cell phone sitting on the other side of glass from a gorilla. Mm-hmm. And this gorilla was just sitting relaxed watching this kid with his cell phone. They were taking selfies, and it was just a really cute video. So you can't even imagine that somebody would be making ugly comments about that. But I went in to look at the comments, and there were people bashing bashing the zoos. And so anyway, I educated them a little bit on what exactly zoos do for these animals. And it's real animal activists.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the people who are really out there for the animals. So anyway, so Andra and I became friends there. But I guess she liked what I said. But she, I think, was, you know, when she found out that we were a small, quote-unquote, organic operation, you know, that still that supports big ag. I think she was just sort of, you know, she was surprised by that. And the reason is because people who raise their livestock like we do, usually, typically, they're very angry and hostile towards big ag. But what I explained to her is that, you know, if it, the fact that I've lived in Africa and I've seen starving people and I've seen where they had at one point enough food in their own country, but because those farms were taken over, they don't have enough food. Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen this happen. And, you know, I don't have a problem with big ag. If we didn't have pork and poultry and beef raised in the way that they're raised, the country is going to starve. There are too many people on this earth that if we raise food only the way that I raise mine, people are going to go hungry. There's no way we can support the earth's population with raising food in small ways. So yeah, I just, you know, I wanted to, when you and I spoke last night, I wanted to make sure that you knew that even though we're small, organic, operation, we support big ag. You guys are the breadbasket of our country. And really, in a lot of ways of the world, you guys export your food to the rest of the world as well. So everybody's bashing big ag and, you know, oh, you're so cruel. Listen, there might be a few farmers out there that really don't care about the welfare of their animals, but it would not be, first of all, it would not be profitable for a farmer to treat his livestock badly because they're not going to produce. You're trying to make money. So so in my experience with big ag farmers is they care very deeply about their livestock. They take very good care of their livestock. So there's this whole demonization of big ag and these farmers that are producing food that we're sitting down at these fancy restaurants and eating every day. And then the people want to turn around and say, oh, you're awful, you know, you're torturing these animals and how could you do that? No. You guys are taking really good care of your livestock. You're taking good, you're providing jobs, you're providing food. So big ag is not our enemy. We work hand in hand with you guys.
Alice Venter, you have been a radio show looking for a frequency or a spot on the dial, and I think we just found it.
Thanks. I appreciate that. It's just common sense.
It is common sense, and now common sense is marketable. That's how sad it is. We have successfully journeyed down the road connecting rural and urban America. Both Alice and myself remind you, all roads do lead to a rural route. At Butt Naked Farms.